Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. My name is Eli Hoff, and I'm the Mizzou sports beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. Want to start this show off with a quick apology for the lack of an episode last week. Went in for some dental work that left me just talking a little bit funny. Didn't feel like imparting that upon you all. But we're back this week, and what a basketball season we are in. Plenty to talk about on the men's hoops front for the Tigers. They went over the weekend to Starkville, Mississippi, bullied the Bulldogs to the tune of a 27-point victory. They go to Knoxville, Tennessee on Wednesday night against the number 4 Volunteers. Play them close, lose 85-81 by 4 points. Mizzou is up into the top 15 of the AP poll. We'll see what happens this weekend against Texas A&M and whether they'll stay there or what the movement looks like there. Generally, this is a team that at this point we are talking about, you know, what seed they will be and how high or low, how close to one that number can be in the NCAA tournament, and not if they'll make it to the tournament. They've got Mizzou's halfway through the SEC slate, sitting at 6-3, tied for third in the conference, but actually fourth, it seems, with the tiebreakers. We'll get to that. I don't fully understand how Florida has a tiebreaker over Missouri right now, given that the Tigers beat the Gators in Gainesville earlier this season. But that's the way it's shaking out on the SEC website. But first, we'll talk a little bit about this most recent game. Again, 85-81, the final score in Knoxville, Tennessee. The Vols ranked fourth in the country. They're a projected number one seed. They've got the nation's best defense. They won that game. The hot take I have here on this game that actually, when I first wrote this down, it has since in my mind become less of a hot take since then, as I've talked to folks who kind of actually agree with this. I think Mizzou's ceiling actually rose after this game. Yes, they lost, but for the reasons I'm about to explain here, I think the ceiling actually just continues to rise for Mizzou. For one, this is the first game this season in which Mizzou scored 80 points and lost. That had been the magic number for the Tigers. If they could get to 80, they were winning. Of course, they got to 81. And again, Tennessee, nation's best defense. Mizzou was in the driver's seat for a good chunk of this game. It took them a little bit to get going, right? Vols defense looked as good as advertised to start, but Mizzou settled in, was in the driver's seat for a good while there. It wasn't until there were 12, 13 minutes left that it really seemed like Tennessee got into the groove. But Mizzou still put up the most points against the Volunteers of any team this season who's played Tennessee. Entering Wednesday night, Kentucky had scored the most on Tennessee with 78. Mizzou beat that by 3 points. So when you look at this Mizzou offense, we've talked a lot this season about the Mizzou defense and the steals and forcing turnovers and just generally good defense, right? They've got a lot more physicality, got a lot more length on that end of the floor. It really, frankly, is the offense that is shining on this SEC stage for Mizzou. And that's one of those things that I think is you can lose sight of the big picture perception of a team when you're following it or you're watching every single game or just most of the games. But I think the reputation around the SEC is actually becoming that Mizzou is just a ridiculously good offense. And it took a little bit to get that off the ground this season. I remember writing and talking here about some of the half-court struggles from early in the season. But undeniably, offense is working for Mizzou. They put up more points than anybody else has this season against Tennessee. And in Tennessee, of course, they've played an SEC slate. They played some legit teams in the non-conference too. Nobody had put up more than 78 until Mizzou dropped 81 in Knoxville, right? Always hard to score 80 on an opponent's home floor. That is a positive, right? That's an undeniable positive. And part of the reason why I think the ceiling has risen and continues to rise for Mizzou. The other part is that for Tennessee to win this game by 4 points, so pretty close, for them to win this game by 4 points, they shot 10 of 15 from three. They made exactly 2/3, 66.7% of their three-pointers went in, and they won by 4 points. That's Tennessee is not a particularly hot 3-point shooting team. They'd had, I believe, going into the game, their last three games, they'd been at or below the 28% mark, or certainly under 30%. They're not a great 3-point shooting team. They had only had one other game this season where they were above 50% just in a game. And then they made 10 of 15. Zakai Ziegler, who is not much of a 3-point shooter, he went 4 for 4. Igor Milicic, 2 for 3. Jazz Lanier, 2 for 5. And Vols get to 10 made threes. It was some decent shots that they were getting, but just one of those things where it's awfully hard to keep pace with an opponent who is making 66% of their threes. And Tennessee wasn't, and Mizzou kept pace. The Tennessee lead swelled to 14 at one point, but Mizzou closed it down enough to at least make the last few minutes interesting there. It never felt like Mizzou was going to be close enough to be in a situation where they could, push it to overtime or get a Dre Holston situation where they're making a shot at the buzzer to snatch a victory in Knoxville. But forcing a very good team like Tennessee, needing by far their best shooting game of the year, just a ridiculous degree of 3-point shooting to beat you, that seems good to me. It's one of those games where I don't like doing the what ifs, right? These teams played a game in Tennessee won, but it feels like if you played Mizzou versus Tennessee 99 more times, right? I'm not sure Tennessee shoots that well in any of them, right? You could even argue the way that game went that Mizzou might win a good number or most of those games if they played that often, which it and that's the hypothetical game I don't really want to play, but it leads me to this. I really want to see Mizzou and Tennessee play each other in the SEC tournament. That would be a fantastic game. You look at the final 4 minutes, little bit of a whistle-heavy sequence there as the game kind of broke down late. But the rest of it, this was a high-powered offense against a high-powered defense. This was teams who the scout is out what these teams want to do and what they want to do to each other. But really high-level coaching, really high-quality basketball here. Give me these two teams on a neutral floor with some postseason implications, and I think you're going to see something really, really compelling between these teams. I just at a lot of points in that second half, as Tennessee clawed back in it, and then Mizzou was sticking around. It's exactly what you want in a high-level conference basketball game, which is what the SEC is delivering a lot of this year. Now we did see that SEC tournament rematch in 2023, Dennis Gates' first year. That was when Golston hit that buzzer beater in Knoxville, and then they met again in the SEC tournament. Mizzou won that rematch in the postseason. We'll talk a little kind of SEC and state of that and seeding where Mizzou could end up there to see if that's even possible. But I certainly would be among the people who would, at this moment in time, sign up for that as a quarterfinal or semifinal in the SEC. I think that's entirely possible. And also, more broadly, there's been a lot of entertainment value between Mizzou and Tennessee in multiple sports lately. When you look at the football element too, something interesting for the over the last few years. The other part of this is just at face value, ignore how the game played out of Mizzou being close and Tennessee's 3-point shooting, all of that. There's no shame in a loss to Tennessee. If you remember from a couple weeks ago, talking about this stretch of ranked opponents that Mizzou is 3/4 of its way through, we said, going undefeated in this run would be incredible, but it's extremely unlikely. Even 3-1 would be a lot. There's just a lot of very good teams go to Knoxville and lose. A lot of very good teams just play this Tennessee team and lose. There's no shame in that. There, again, this is going to happen to other teams here. This was the expectation. Mizzou is, in terms of what the expectation was, even just a month ago, they are playing with house money because of some of these wins they've gotten. So I weirdly think this is almost still a net positive result for Mizzou. Obviously, a win over Tennessee would have been incredible and done a lot for the season, for the resume, for what's in place. But almost there's just as much proof of concept in this kind of result, where you can go out and we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty, but you can go out and have a few players who just really don't have good games. Mark Mitchell, Nate Robinson, By their standards, bad games. Even Trent Pierce, just a pretty poor game. And Tamar Bates didn't. He scored 22 points, but hadn't scored at halftime, right? That you can have that happen, and you're still at half. They were leading Tennessee. That you can still push them and force them to have to make 66% of their threes to beat you. That proves that this Mizzou team is legit. That proves that they can certainly stick with anybody. I'd argue they can beat anybody. If Tennessee merely goes 8 for 15 from three, that'd still be above 50%. If they go 8 for 15, right? Maybe that's different. You can play all those what ifs, but the fact that that's even a conversation we can have, I think is testament to something with this Mizzou team. I imagine all of you are bought in by now. If you aren't, I don't know what sort of result they're going to get that is going to turn you in their favor. Mizzou is fun to watch. They are competitive in these games. Even maybe you say Auburn is in a tier of its own in the SEC. Maybe you say Auburn and Duke nationally are in a tier of their own. But I really am inclined to think, and I believe this when I say it, Mizzou is capable of beating any team in the country, right? It doesn't mean they necessarily would, but it's hard for me to imagine a matchup that Mizzou goes into having seen what we've now seen from this team, and you say, nah, they don't have a chance. It's really hard for me to imagine there is one, and that's what makes this fun. We'll talk a little bit about how Mizzou's the rest of the regular season schedule shapes up and the expectations there, but something really, really special with this team. I want to get into the nitty-gritty of the Tennessee game a little bit here, just to talk about a couple of trends from those players I mentioned who had some down performances. The key one there was Anthony Robinson, the point guard. Not a pretty stat line from him. He only played 6 minutes. He started both halves, and I don't think he played outside of the start of each period. 6 minutes, 0 for 3 from the field, 0 for 1 from 3. No rebounds, no assists. Did have 3 steals, and then 4 personal fouls. He was in foul trouble pretty quickly after the game started, and then he was in danger of fouling out pretty quickly after the second half started. There was actually one call that went his way that he very well could have fouled out. And players are prone to have just a no good, very bad outing, right? But this has been it is now a trend with Ant Robinson. He's had it down last really five games. There's a pretty clear distinction here. Those last five games, I'm gonna word vomit the stats at you real quick here so you can get a point here. But I think most of you all have kind of picked up on this happening over the last five games. So mentioned against Tennessee, 6 minutes, 4 fouls, no points. At Mississippi State over the weekend, he played 16 minutes, still had 4 fouls, had 4 points on 2 for 5 shooting, and then had the 6 turnovers against the Bulldogs. A week before that against Ole Miss, 25 minutes, 5 fouls. He fouled out, made 1 shot, had 7 points and 4 turnovers. At Texas, in that really just ugly, ugly offensive game, he played 27 minutes, went 2 for 7 for 8 points, had 4 fouls there. And then at home against Arkansas, he played 31 minutes. He was 1 for 7 from the field, 7 points, had 6 rebounds, which was valuable in that game, and then 3 fouls there. And there's actually a very clear distinction with those 5 games. In the games before it, he'd been in double figures scoring wise in the 3 games prior. And in these last five, he's at I'm trying to do the quick math. I think under 30 points scored in these last 5 games, and a whole lot of fouls, almost constant foul trouble with him. I don't want to rip him unfairly or anything like that, but it has been an undeniably really rough stretch for him, and just uncharacteristic based on what we'd seen from him through non-conference play, the month of December, and even the start of SEC play. You could tell he certainly wasn't going to have the level of productivity in doing everything against SEC opponents that he had against some of those, low majors, the quad three, quad four games that they were getting in the non-con. But it seemed like something was clicking into place at a really nice degree for him, and that just hasn't been the case. And I bring this up because it was extremely visible against Tennessee that when you have him playing only 6 minutes and he's being put on the bench for T.O. Barrett to get an extended run, that seemed to me a message, because even in these other games, he'd been struggling from the field. He'd had the turnovers, he had the fouls, but he was still playing Mississippi State, 16 minutes, 25 and 27 against Ole Miss and Texas. Dennis Gates was giving him time on the floor to let him figure it out. That went away against Tennessee. And I don't think you can argue with Dennis Gates on that or say that it was unfair or undeserved given what recent performances have been for Ant Robinson. It's now at the point Dennis Gates, I should say, has used the same starting lineup since the LSU game. It's now been what, 8 games in a row with the same starters: Ant Robinson, Tony Perkins, Tamar Bates, Trent Pierce, and Mark Mitchell. It's now if you're starting Ant Robinson and he's just going to go out and get called for a couple fouls or cough up the ball a couple times in those first few minutes, then you do start to wonder what the value of starting him is. And I think that question is a fair one at this point in time. The struggles at that point guard spot, I think also it's the one position that having somebody just not just having an off night, but having a bad night or a detrimental night actually puts a strain on the team across the board, right? This is a very deep Mizzou team. They've got a lot of pieces. They can actually have most of the team have an off night because they really only need three or so guys to pop for it to really work. You look at against Tennessee, only three players scored in double figures, in double digits. That was Tamar Bates with 22, Tony Perkins with 16, and Caleb Grill with 11. And that was enough. You get a trickle of points from everybody else, but those three are enough to get you to 81 points, and you're sticking with Tennessee, right? They can afford off nights. Point guard, however, is the shallowest position to make that happen. Perkins, obviously another point guard on the roster. He'll start. He scored 16. He had a really nice, I call it a microwave sequence where he just gets hot for a little bit. He's been prone to that at times this season and had a couple bursts there. He had one of those against Tennessee, and that was helpful. And then T.O. Barrett, who looks good for a freshman. He's done well with the minutes he's getting, and you can see him kind of growing and processing things in real time. But he is still a freshman who looks like a freshman at times. And so if Ant Robinson is just not going to be playable in a given game, that puts a strain on that position just because there isn't a ton of depth there, right? At shooting guard, say Tamar Bates has a day where it just isn't working. You've got Caleb Grill, you've got Marcus Work, you've got, even Honor Boateng, who can bring into the game there. And if Mark Mitchell, and we'll talk about him in a second, but if he's just having a game where he's in foul trouble or just completely ineffective, right? You've got Trent Pierce, you've got Jacob Cruz, Marcus Allen, Aiden Shaw, you've got bodies you can bring into that position and you don't have to miss a huge beat. At center, if Josh Gray isn't working, which has been the case in some games this season, they can give Peyton Marshall a run out or they can go small. It's just at that point guard spot, the ability to adjust. It's just a little more limited than other positions. It's a very important role for this team. There's also just the fact that this team is better when Ant Robinson is playing well. You look at who they were in non-conference. He seemed like so much of the engine for this system that is steal the ball from you, drive to the rim, Ant Robinson makes this team better. He raises their ceiling, right? We keep talking about ceiling, ceiling, ceiling for this team. The ceiling goes up when Ant Robinson is in the game and playing well. And what this is something where I'll write about this and ask Dennis Gates at what he's seeing, because again, it's gotten to the point where it's not just a flash in the pan. This is a trend with Ant Robinson. But it seems to me that it's a matter of early mistakes derailing him. Because you see this early in the games against Mississippi State. It was all those turnovers early on. Tennessee was picking up the quick two fouls. He had a couple early fouls. Maybe it was Ole Miss. He had a couple early fouls as well. This just keeps happening, where you can tell it'll be something like that, and he just kind of goes off the rails at that point. It could even be he'll be handsy on defense, and that's part of the instructions for him is to try to steal the ball, and he'll get called for that. He'll do something when he's driving. He's kind of an undersized guy. When he's driving, he'll have his offhand elbow, or not the hand dribbling the ball, but he'll kind of go for space there. But that elbow comes up and it becomes a foul, right? He's elbowing people off. Can't do that. He'll get called for that, and it feels like it spirals really quickly from him after that first mistake. And And Dennis Gates has talked about this with Ant's development for this season. He was talking about it more in the lens of free throw shooting. Ant Robinson, great free throw shooter, but started missing free throws a little while back. And that the messaging from the coaching staff to Ant Robinson was working on the kind of mental resilience almost of, you can make a mistake and that's fine. You're going to make mistakes. Every player on the floor is going to make at least one, if not, multiple mistakes over the course of a game. And that's fine. You gotta get back in it, next possession, et cetera. All that stuff that sounds sort of cliche of just the next possession, next shot, et cetera, like that has to be in place. And it seems like that's been the struggle for Ant Robinson. So I'd expect the team is working with him on just trying to help him with being able to make mistakes and still be engaged, still be playable in the game. But that they need that to come online. Again, they have out of these last five games, right? They've won three of those, and were close in the other two. They can play well without Ant Robinson on the floor. They can win without Ant Robinson, but sure would be nice for the Tigers if they were getting a little bit more out of him in that spot. Something else to notice here, Mark Mitchell has scored 7 or fewer points in the last four games. He was 0 for 6 from the field, wound up getting 4 points via the free throw line versus Tennessee. This is something I want to watch a little bit more heading into this weekend against Texas A&M. I think some of it is teams game planning for him. Mizzou had showed a tendency early on this year to, especially early in games, try to really feed Mark Mitchell in the post and establish him down low and get that going. He is, relative to some of these SEC bigs, he's a little undersized. The finishing at the rim chops, I think, sometimes aren't there or are inconsistently there. And so I think some of this is teams game planning for him, or knowing they can attack him, knowing that if they can defend him without fouling, it will have an impact on how effective Mark Mitchell is down low. But that is something to monitor here. And some of this, the kind of contrary aspect to that, is just how teams are defending Caleb Grill. Because goodness gracious, the shooting from Caleb Grill, he was only 2 for 3 against Tennessee. I say only with air quotes that you can't see there. And I guess that's maybe one of those things that's a win for both parties. Like, it's good if you're saying only 2 for 3. If you're Tennessee, you're probably saying, thank goodness we only let this guy get three shots off from beyond the arc and he only made two. And I say that because there was a sequence. His one missed three came from the right wing. He shot it from, more or less where the NBA 3-point line is, right? A little bit farther back than the college line. And it was an open three that he just missed. But right behind him was the Tennessee bench and all of the Vols assistant coaches. As soon as the ball got past the grill and it was evident that he was wide open and was going to get a free shot off, they looked as mad as any other play in the game, more mad than any other play in the game. They were just livid that the Vols had given up an open three to Caleb Grill. That to me is the ultimate testament to the game plan being, we cannot let this guy get open shots. He makes the contested ones. He really does. He made, one off the glass that was falling contested. He makes some crazy threes. He made one from, I think it was the E and the first E in Tennessee. Another logo shot from him. He makes those. So don't give him any easy free ones. But he missed the one easy free one and made the two more difficult ones. But you can tell teams are prioritizing that defensively, and so you'd almost think that would free up Mark Mitchell or make it a little bit easier on him down low, but. These are SEC teams who can probably game plan against multiple opponents in any given matchup, so making that a little tougher. One other thing on Grill, I've really enjoyed since the teams have started or the opponents have started adjusting and maybe even over-adjusting to his three-point shooting threat, that they're closing out so aggressively, they're just chasing him around the perimeter wherever he goes. His driving and cutting and just his movement with and without the ball manipulates a defense now because he has that gravity, and they're so concerned with trying to keep him from shaking free that he can manipulate the defense. So some of his drives, really against Mississippi State, they were being very aggressive with the closeouts, and he was able to drive right past them, force a rotation from the defense, and kick it out to somebody. That was a really nice development for Caleb Grill. All right, let's take a look at Mizzou in the SEC and how the rest of the season is going to shape up here. As I mentioned, at this time of recording, Mizzou halfway through its SEC slate. The Tigers will play, as everybody in the SEC does, 18 games. They're 6-3, sitting fourth in the SEC. In terms of record, they're tied with Florida and Texas A&M, and Mizzou gets sandwiched in the middle of those. It seems odd to me that I would assume they'd have a direct tiebreaker over Florida. I will admit, I don't understand the SEC tiebreakers. They've gotten a lot more complex with more teams in the mix now. Some of the football ones were incredibly in-depth. So I'm going off the standings on the SEC website. I would assume they are programmed to handle the tiebreaker correctly. We'll see if that changes or if it's something that's a bigger deal. It's halfway through, the standings don't matter all that much at this point. And the head-to-heads will get more and more confusing as this goes. But Mizzou, nonetheless, in that tier. I put out a tweet this morning of just, I went in and filled out the SEC tournament bracket based on the current standings and how it would look. Mizzou, so, would be the 4 seed there. They would get that double bye. There's 16 teams in the SEC, but it's not just like a one play 16, et cetera. To reward those top 4 teams, they get to sit out the first 2 rounds. If you are 5 through 8, you get to sit out 1 round. And then it's those bottom 8 teams that play first, and then they move through the bracket from there. So Mizzou's sort of arm of the SEC tournament bracket right now would actually be a really kind of funny one. I bring it up on here just because of this. It would be sort of a Big 12 alumni game. You'd have Texas and Oklahoma playing each other in the first round of the tournament, which would be a fun one. Winner of that game would advance to play Texas A&M, and then the winner there, so one of Texas, Oklahoma, or A&M, would play Missouri in the quarterfinals. Eventual winner, they would go on to play number 1 seed Auburn, and that's kind of that's the picture right now. But again, 9 games to go for Mizzou, 8 or 9 games for everybody else in the league at this point. Plenty will change. I wanted to take a look at the rest of the SEC schedule because, only a few weeks ago we were on here talking about, let's find the path to 8 games, right? What games does Missouri have to win to get to 8? They only have to win 2 between now and the end of the season to get to 8 wins, of course, which should be incredibly doable. But it still is hard to say, okay, here's what the ceiling is of this team, especially to try to put that in some sort of postseason frame, because March Madness can be so random. Like parsing out the ceiling of, an Elite Eight team versus a Sweet 16 team seems hard to do at this point in the season, and hard for me because I don't get to watch every college basketball game in the country every single week. I'm often at or writing about them as they take place, so I don't pretend to know much of what's going on in other conferences. But I think we know enough about Mizzou and the SEC at this point to put these next or these last 9 games of the regular season into one of 3 tiers. Those tiers being the quote unquote must wins, right? Or the winner there's a problem sort of games. Then the type of games that you think Mizzou, if they're as good as they've shown or as we think they can be, that they should win most of these. And then a couple games that even though, as I mentioned, it's very evident Mizzou can compete or beat anybody on any given night, some games still look like they might be a little bit more of a stretch than others. So those are the 3 tiers of broken games into the winner there's a problem, the should wins, and the it'd be nice to win sort of games. In that first tier, we'll go tier by tier and kind of break down the schedule and then come up with a ceiling from there and kind of a benchmark for this, because it's the halfway point and it's a good time to do that. The winner there's a problem tier. I've got 2 games in here that I think Mizzou needs to win, or again, at this point it's not going to be panic. Mizzou's still far ahead of schedule for making the NCAA tournament, but these would certainly be disappointing losses. And that is a home game against Oklahoma on February 12th and a home game against South Carolina on February 25th. The South Carolina game, the Gamecocks 0-9 in SEC play to start here. Again, it's always statistically unlikely that somebody goes winless in any given season, but watching a couple of teams play against them, I think they're starting to run into the situation that Mizzou encountered during last year's winless run of that reaches a point where other teams really, really, really don't want to be the first team to lose to you. And so if it's close late, they're going to find a little extra edge because they just don't want to be the team that lost to the team that hadn't won a game in league play. I did not expect this for South Carolina. It's unlucky for them and very unlucky for former Mizzou center Jordan Butler, who now has played what 19 plus 9, 28 SEC games in his college career and has lost all of them. That's a tough go. So got to beat South Carolina at home. Even if they're a 1 or 2 win team by that point, that's the nature of it. Got to win that game. And then home against Oklahoma. We'll talk the away game at Oklahoma is in the next tier we'll get to, but this is a game KenPom gives Mizzou a 72% chance to win that next week against Oklahoma at home. KenPom has Mizzou by 6 there. That's just a game that it can be close, but if Mizzou is going to push towards the top of the SEC, they need to beat a team like Oklahoma that is in that kind of bottom to middle part of the SEC. It just has to happen. So 2-0 in those games, or it'll be a disappointment. In the should win tier, I've got four games here. I've got home against Texas A&M on Saturday coming up here. The next one, Texas A&M is ranked 10 in the country. They're coming off a bye or their idle slot. They did not play a midweek game, so they're going to be fresh. They'd had some injuries. Wade Taylor the fourth missed some time, but a lot of pieces back from last year's team. It seems like a familiar buzz team in the form of Texas A&M. That's one that just given the fact that it's in Columbia, Mizzou should probably win that. It'll be an interesting test because, as we talked about, A&M and Florida are in this tier with Missouri. They all have the same 6-3 record at this point. And given that they're clumped up, it'll be interesting to see how they separate. Because it feels like certainly third place in the SEC, but given Alabama just has the gauntlet of all gauntlets to run through between now and the end of the regular season. It's worth, I don't have it handy, but look up Alabama's schedule. It's incredible how many ranked games they have in a row and how difficult it's going to be. I think they have two versus Auburn, who number one team Auburn to go. But that makes me think that certainly third place, maybe even second place in the SEC is still up for grabs. The mix of teams right now that would seem to be in that are Alabama, Missouri, Florida and Texas A&M. So while every game is of course going to mean a lot for that, those games against teams in that level I think mean a lot. So should win against A&M at home. If they lose, it will not be catastrophic. A&M is a good basketball team. These things happen. But sure would be nice for Mizzou to get there because of the seeding battle that's going to take place in that tier. Then also in this mix of games, I've got three road games at Georgia, at Arkansas, at Vanderbilt. Mizzou has already seen Arkansas and Vanderbilt and beat them on the home floor. They go in this tier simply because of the road element. It'll be interesting to see what Arkansas looks like when Mizzou gets there. That's on February 22nd. Got a few games to go between now and then. But Arkansas seems to, there's some signs of life in Fayetteville. They won't have Boogie Flam the guard for the rest of the year, but signs of life in Fayetteville that could be a little bit more lively by the time Mizzou gets there. Vanderbilt has been very good on its home floor, so that goes in there. Georgia is kind of a tough nut to crack. That's one of only two games that Mizzou is not favored to win, even slightly on KenPom. So out of those four games, home against A&M, at Georgia, at Arkansas, at Vanderbilt, my benchmark here for Mizzou would be winning three out of those four. That would be very good. Two out of four is probably the minimum you want to see there. And then three out of four would be good there. Given that they could be getting, out of this rank stretch they're in now, three out of four, that you can do the proportions at a certain point here, but three out of four should wins, I think would maintain the pace Mizzou's on, or maybe continue this rise in terms of stature. And then the last tier that maybe it's still a little bit of a stretch to think that Missouri will win these, but they certainly can, is home against Alabama. I'd say that just we don't know what it's still hard to actually get a sense of how good this Alabama team is. Are they in this? Or they could be on a level with Auburn, I suppose, if they really run through some teams here, but are they more in this tier with the Florida, A&M, Missouri, maybe even Tennessee? You know, where does Alabama shake out in here? We're going to start seeing that very, very quickly here. But so I've got them in this tier for now. And then at Oklahoma, they're certainly a decent team. Oklahoma is that one late in the regular season. Things could happen there. And then I have the home regular season finale versus Kentucky. This game is already sold out. It is more than a month away. Today, the day of recording today is February 6th. That game is on March 8th, and it's already a sellout. I have that one here just because we don't really know what these teams are going to be playing for on that day. Of course, they're going to be playing for a win, and I'm sure both will be playing for seeding position. But you know, maybe Kentucky is playing for maybe somebody's playing for a bye in the SEC tournament or something. That the stakes could change between now and then, and I do think Kentucky is, you know, they're certainly a very decent team this year, even if they are losing at home to their former coach. So I think with those three, home against Bama and Kentucky at Oklahoma, if you go 2-1 here, that's outstanding. If you go 1-2, I think that's fine. Not gonna be catastrophic there. So let's put all of that math together here. If you go with two of the must wins, three of the should wins, and two of the stretch wins, that's 7-2, which would actually be a better clip than the first half of SEC play. Let's do 6-3 right now, but that'd be 7-2 there. And all in all, that would put you at a 13-5 mark in the SEC, which is looking at KenPom projections, that puts you know, at worst third, but potentially or probably second in the SEC. KenPom currently projects Alabama to get to 13-5 and be number two in the conference. And I think that is the realistic ceiling, 7-2 in this stretch here, right? It's you know, I guess like technically 9-0 is the ceiling, right? But it's so improbable and difficult to predict that I think 7-2 is the high end bar for all right, this is given what we think this Missouri team can do. I think they are capable of going 7-2 here. They're probably capable of going more, right? They can win any game. They've showed that. But 7-2 feels like the ceiling here. KenPom predicts 11 wins there, which would be fifth in the SEC, and that lines up. Again, Auburn seems to be far and away the best team. Alabama is probably the next best, but they're going to have to prove that down the stretch here. Then you see Florida, Missouri, A&M in that tier. You see a tier below of Tennessee, Ole Miss, Kentucky. One of those teams could make a run in the back end here and get back up there. So the median outcome at this point would probably be Missouri landing somewhere in that 4-5-6 range in the SEC. If they drop off, maybe they're finishing around that 7-8. But if they can get to 11-12 wins here, that starts to track for what we've seen from this Missouri team so far. But Texas A&M comes to town this weekend. That's the start of this run. A game that Mizzou probably should win, but not catastrophic if they lose. They, of course, have built themselves a pretty good cushion and a pretty good margin for error in conference play as they march towards an NCAA tournament berth and likely a fairly decent seed in the SEC tournament. That's all for today's episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. You can always find our shows wherever you get your podcasts and online at stltoday.com. You can, of course, read all of my work, my coverage of Mizzou men's basketball. Diamond Sports are starting up Mizzou softball in play. Opens the season down in Florida. This weekend, got a preview for them. Mizzou baseball is down in Puerto Rico. Unfortunately, no work trip to Puerto Rico for me, but nonetheless going to have a season preview of the baseball team next week. Spring football, whatever that ends up looking like, coming up pretty soon here. Plenty to keep you occupied in the Mizzou sports universe over at stltoday.com. We appreciate it when you rate, review, like, subscribe, and do all the other actions you can do to support your friendly neighborhood Mizzou sports podcast. Until next week, thanks for listening to the Eye on the Tigers podcast.